Pass the orange. Between Christmas and New Year's, our family traditionally gathers at our cabin in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, along the shores of Lake Superior. Several other families have the same tradition, and therefore New Year's has been celebrated with the same group of family and friends over many decades and generations. This little community is extraordinarily tight. The cabins are isolated beyond the reach of cell phones. There is no TV and the days are short, with the sun setting by 4:30 p.m. So there is much communal time in the cabins, and the evenings are filled with a variety of quirky parlor games, so ingrained in tradition that I really never gave them a second thought. However, this year I put myself in the shoes of a newcomer, stumbling unprepared into this odd little enclave, thrust into a raucous living room on a cold, dark night with no escape. I realize now that no matter how genial and welcoming this cozy group is, outsiders roped into the medley of games cannot help but think that they are being subjected to a series of institutionalized assaults on their personal space. The first game is called Boston. Everyone sits in a chair in a circle with one person blindfolded in the middle. He calls out some sort of category such as, "Everyone who's wearing glasses," or more pointedly, "Anyone who voted for George Bush." And those people have to get up and switch seats. Meanwhile, the poor sap in the middle flails around trying to catch someone. Once he grabs someone, he gets three feels to guess who the person is. If you are caught, you can usually maneuver yourself so that the feels hit something harmless, like your arm. Sometimes other bystanders will leap to your aid by offering decoy hats or glasses. Everyone is too polite to grope for the goodies, but still. I have not been to the Upper Peninsula for several years and was horrified to hear that the game Pass the Orange has been added to the mix. This one really put me over the top in terms of the personal space issue. You may remember this game when you were a giggly teenager in the basement rec room. Now, on New Year's Eve, it has been resuscitated as a fun, multi-generational family game. The group is divided into several teams arranged in a line. The first person puts the orange between his chin and neck, and then he must pass it to the chin and neck of the next person without using his hands. This maneuver requires a major body clinch, complete with rubbing between the two players as the orange gets loose and wanders around your chest, a thoroughly unappealing process unless you can handpick your partner. Anyone wanting a refresher on Pass the Orange is referred to the movie Charade, starring Cary Grant and Audrey Hepburn. Cary Grant is challenged with retrieving the orange from the fleshy neck of a mammiferous and dowdy woman. He approaches the woman with respect, but then realizes that there is no solution except for the full-on body press, mashing her breasts in the process. Serious personal space issues. The specter of having to play Pass the Orange prompted me to consider the whole concept of personal space. The formal name of the field is called proxemics, founded by the anthropologist Edward Hall in the 1960s. He identified three different zones. First, there is the intimate space, in other words, the pass the orange space, measuring from 0 to 18 inches. This proximity permits access to sensory input other than visual, i.e. full-on touch, smell, and body heat. The next is the personal space, measuring from 1 to 4 feet. Hall envisioned the personal space as a small protective sphere, permitting a welcoming handshake, but also the possibility of domination by grabbing somebody by the arms. In cultures where bowing is the normal greeting, the personal space is a tad wider to prevent head conking. Beyond the personal space is the social space, measuring 4 to 12 feet, a large enough distance that no one expects to be touched, but close enough for conversation. Finally, there is the public space of 12 feet or more, a distance where somebody could take evasive action if threatened. Once defined, I realized that I could easily perceive the transition between these zones. When conversing in a loud and crowded room, I definitely feel I am crossing barriers as I lean my head from the social into the personal space, and then it is somewhat uncomfortable if I need to dip my head further into the intimate space in order to be heard. We recently bought new porch furniture and were pleased to think that 8 people could comfortably sit on our porch based on 2 easy chairs and 2 3-seater sofas. However, the sales lady pointed out that people never want to sit 3 to a couch. The function of the middle seat is to create the optimal personal space. I thought that this was a ridiculous notion until I saw guests pulling over an uncomfortable wooden chair instead of taking a vacant middle seat on the couch. Hall pointed out that his measurements applied mostly to Americans and that the dimensions of the different spaces may depend on social settings and cultural backgrounds. For example, the dimensions of personal space tend to be smaller in Asian countries and more generally in any densely populated setting. In contrast, affluent people tend to demand greater personal space. Of course, all the rules are broken if you're forced into the intimate space on a crowded bus or train. At this point, Americans try to deny the enforced intimacy by staring off into the distance and not acknowledging that they are plastered up against someone. People also consider an overheard telephone conversation as an invasion of personal space, most noticeable on a noisy train when the person sitting next to you is yelling over the ambient noise. The last time I was on a commuter train, I noticed that they had designated some cars as quiet cars, where cell phones were not permitted. It turns out that observing behavior in an elevator provides an interesting insight into cultural norms of personal space. In the United States, everyone enters the elevator and immediately turns and silently faces the elevator door. Women put their purses in front of them in a protective pose. It would be an interesting experiment to enter the elevator and turn and face everyone and watch the nervous energy mount. In contrast, Asians, in general, actually seek to diminish personal space by deliberately standing right next to you in an elevator, even if there's plenty of space. Same thing in a public bathroom. Supposedly, Asians will select the stall next to yours, even if there are rows of unoccupied ones. Our son Ned lives in China and experiences the diminished personal space on a daily basis. People tend to bunch together in lines well within the intimate zone. Since Ned is taller than most Chinese, his nose is typically at their head level, and the olfactory input kicks in. He ends up smelling their hair. The last time I played Pass the Orange was in my early teens, when it did offer the tantalizing prospect of getting up close with a heartthrob. On the chance that I might be missing something after all these years, I convinced Nick to demo a game in our kitchen. Sure enough, we immediately realized that the only way to get the orange was to throw ourselves in a deep embrace. But far from romance, we both recoiled at the thought of, 1, doing this in public, or 2, even worse, doing it with someone else. And then because they were in season, we tried to pass a clementine, but that was even more difficult. I cannot think of anyone that I would like to play Pass the Orange with in public, so I tried to think of who I would least like to play with. In order to narrow the field down from every human being, I decided to identify my 3 most unappealing politicians based on both personal and physical attributes. In no particular order, here are the 3 that I would least like to play Pass the Orange with. 1. Arnold Schwarzenegger. The Terminator gets a spot on the list because I find him so physically repulsive. I can only visualize him in his well-oiled bodybuilding phase with an over-eager and leering grin on his face. Additionally, a general rule of thumb should be never play Pass the Orange with someone with a zipper problem. I'm nobody's idea of a cougar, but why take any chances? 2. Richard Nixon. Physically unattractive is a no-brainer for Pass the Orange, but in addition, this guy is so stiff and awkward, and his sallow and sweaty complexion and 5 o'clock shadow in his debate with Kennedy are a lasting memory. If you are forced into playing Pass the Orange, you want someone who would try to make the best of a bad thing, not take themselves too seriously, and just get it over with. Don't think that Tricky Dick could do it. After all, this was the man who strolled down the beach wearing a suit and wingtip shoes. 3. Adolf Hitler. I knew that one of my picks would have to be a genocidal dictator, and sadly, I have so many to choose from. Pol Pot, Joseph Stalin, Slobodan Milosevic, and any number of African despots. I choose Hitler because of the additional sensory input in the intimate zone. Adolf had well-chronicled halitosis and chronic intestinal gas that could wilt a rosebud. He gets the nod as the worst of the worst.